And now it's time for wait a minute. What the hell is the show called again?
It's Chatter on Books. What else do you want me to say? Can I go now?
That's right. It's Chatter on Books. Let's do this thing.
We are back. It is Chatter on Books. It's our 43rd episode, which is shocking. Coming to you from our favorite undisclosed location, and I'm looking quite across the table at David Aldridge. We're so glad you're back.
What?
Yay! Michael came back last week. It's Thanksgiving.
The gang is back together.
That's right. All the children are coming.
Michael's here. Jeannie's here. We have a lot going on. We have a lot we need to get cranking through this evening. We got some random thoughts. Jeannie's got a wonderful book/list. Michael's got some thoughts about ebooks for toddlers. David, we have to ask.
I got
about
nothing.
Naps. Nothing. We have our featured author, Kathleen Barber, who has a wonderful, wonderful book called Are You Sleeping, which is soon to be on Apple TV, very soon, right? Within a month or so. And then another book coming out
that's
in February.
Soon.
Yeah.
That's soon.
And I have a wonderful, well, I thought it was a wonderful pop quiz that I'm going to deliver in the Deserted Island segment. And then the more I looked at it today, I said, this doesn't work for a podcast, but we'll try it anyhow. I was over at Calvert Woodley today. Michael Sands says, go Nats.
Thank you, Michael.
Yeah. Thank you, Michael. The wine is a really interesting wine this evening. Calvert Woodley at 4339 Connecticut Avenue. Go there. He says you can still use Nationals 5 at checkout and get $5 off. So go there. So this is called Chateau Maurice. It is called La Touge, 2017. Everybody in Calvert Woodley, which is incredible, said this is a big red. It's a very big red. I seem to be the only
big red,
one drinking
big red.
It. It's big.
Big red.
But the vineyard is run by this really interesting guy in France who is a Brit. His uncle was the first prime minister in the UK after Churchill. And he was kind of a bad actor, got thrown out of Eton or one of those boarding schools that you get thrown out of in the UK, goes to France, starts this vineyard. It's one of the most sustainably wonderful vineyards. And he gets all sorts of kudos for how he produces these wines. But I think it's really good. And then Jeff in La Cheeserie paired it. Michael, you have to tell me if you like it, with a Fontina cheese. Have you tried it?
I did. And the cheese is great. But
is it a big cheese? Because they said you need a big cheese to go with a big red.
Let's just go back to the triple Brie and Blue from last week. I was in a dark place.
Michael and I have been
Monday,
talking about
forward
that.
To game six through. And seven. This is after the homestand. And I sat in the secret undisclosed location pounding that cheese. And I've been dreaming about it.
We talked about it.
Parade days, Halloween.
The next day. It was so
good. It was
good.
Pretty remarkable. Yeah, it was gone that night. Okay, so this is a Fontina. It's Italian. It's from cow's milk. It's got Jeannie, the food person, the PDO.
Oh,
the
yeah, so it's point of origin. Thank so you. It's produced and has a kind of statute that says you can't call it this.
Nobody can copy this. It's like champagne. You can't call it if
and,
it's not
and like certain tomatoes and prosciutto and things like that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's really good. I've had a lot of both. Okay, so go to Calvert Woodley. I have a couple of very quick randoms, and then I think we'll do Jeannie and then Michael and then David. My randoms, Walter Cronkite was born on this day. In 1916. And if you have not read his autobiography, a lot of these mega journalist types do their books and you just go, oh, please. His is really good.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yeah, he tried very hard to make it more about what was going on in the era in which he did these things than himself, which is a little bit different than some of the others. And then 40 years ago today, what happened? Michael can't answer because he's too young. Kathleen can't answer because she's too young. David can't answer.
What day is it?
Today is November 4th. 40 years ago.
November 4th, 19... Oh, the hostages.
Very good.
Yeah.
Oh, good
hostages in Iran.
Yeah. Right.
Was that the first time we in the United States became aware of the fact that there were people in other parts of the world that really hated us? You know what I mean? That
yes.
So,
yeah. It was
yes.
The first... Very shocking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Two really great books, if you haven't read them. Ken Follett's book... On the Wings of Eagles, which is about Ross Perot, and I have mixed feelings about Ross Perot. But good. And Mark Bowden's Guests of the Ayatollah.
May I recommend Rune Arledge's posthumous autobiography, Rune, which is about how Nightline started, because Nightline
that's
was originally
right.
called America Held Hostage.
That's yeah, right.
It's about
right.
the Iran
Ted
hostage
Koppel.
Crisis.
That was,
and that's what made Ted Koppel a star.
Mm-hmm. That was. And what did that show? It started a whole new kind of... News coverage, right?
Well, what it started was something other than Johnny Carson doing well at night.
Right, which everybody said never could happen.
Right. Nobody ever Everybody tried Joey Bishop.
And in a
Everybody
way,
tried to go after him, and a news show is what started to take him down.
In a way, it's a precursor to cable news, you know, that it was just on every night. And even
but CNN was on since 1980.
Correct, but it hadn't penetrated.
It started at the same time. Yeah. Right.
But there was a certain urgency to America held
hostage. Think about what Koppel did every night. He talked about Iran, a country that no one had ever heard of, or no one had paid any attention to. Maybe people have heard of it. And he talked about things like the Iranian secret police, and he talked to Sadegh Gotsbadeh every night. And it was, just think about how substantial
that how much
was.
He put into it.
And but how much people accepted it. Like, people wanted to know about what was going on there.
Serious stuff.
It was not this fluff that we do nowadays that passes as news. It was actual hardcore news for hardcore consumers. And I just think about that, and it wasn't that long ago.
Yeah.
So what happened?
No, I guess he still is a very serious guy. Years later, when the U.S. was going to go into Iraq and we started the embedding media in the program, he and one of his top producers, who I can see and I can't remember his name, wanted to be embedded. And they came to me at the Pentagon. I said, it's not my choice. What we did was we would say to all the media outlets, this is how many slots we're giving to you. You have to decide who you're sending. And most of them, quite rightfully, were sending younger people.
Sure.
But Ted Koppel and his producer were convinced that it somehow was my decision. And so they decided months in advance of what we thought might be the start of the war, they were going to start working out. And they'd be running around the streets of D.C. with 25-pound packs on and working out and doing all these kinds of things. And they kept sending me updates. And I go, this is great. You're looking really fit, but I have nothing to do with this. But they took it so seriously, and they so much wanted to do it.
Yeah.
He's a cool guy.
Yeah.
Still alive, right?
Yes.
Where's his daughter? Remember, she went on TV. Andrea Koppel?
Andrea Koppel. I don't know.
I see him from time to time in my old neighborhood. So he's
really?
He's
nice
very
guy.
Much up and about.
Very nice guy. Okay, so Jeannie, we're going to go to your book, and I'm going to give you a little warm-up to this. So, Kathleen, since the start of the show, for many months, I would just belittle these bestseller lists in the New York Times. And I just for lots of different reasons. And, for instance, I've known authors who have gamed the system to get their dreadful books on the bestseller list. But over time, I've come to appreciate them and have begun to think there are so many zillions of books out there you could read. It does help you sort through. And there are books I never would have read if I hadn't watched them endlessly. So Where the Crawdads Sing. I never would have read that book if I hadn't gone, it's been on there for a long time, finally, right? So Jeannie is slowly but surely bringing me around to the value of lists.
Yeah, so I was just rearranging my books the other day and came across
this. Because that's what we do.
I came across this book.
By color? By size? How are you rearranging your books?
It's small. And it is called Books of the Century. And it was compiled by the New York Public Library, which had an exhibition of books from 1895 to 1995,
cool,
which celebrated the first 100 years
good
of
century.
The New York Public Library. So even though this list, now this book, is almost 25 years old, to go through it is really to learn about that 100 years in its breadth and depth. It is across all continents. It is across all sciences.
All continents, literature. Or just North America and Europe?
No. It has Borges. It has South American. Mm-hmm. The only restriction they had was that an author could only be in there once. So, for example, you couldn't have two James Joyce books, you know.
Mm-hmm. Thank God.
But they...
Just saying.
They really were smart. They put things in this list like the UN Charter, which wasn't typically a book, but once it was something that was published, they included it.
Hmm.
They put the Surgeon General's report.
Hmm. Which one?
In this list.
The smoky one?
The smoky one.
Smoky one, okay.
Yeah, 64.
Mm-hmm.
And they had sort of obvious landmark novels, but they really reached out. They had poems. They had science. They had the double helix.
Oh, wow.
And it's so funny in this little summary they have of the double helix by Watson. They said, it's too soon to know whether DNA will be relevant. Fingerprints are still much more
that's great.
Than DNA.
That's great. And
this book was published in 1996, so that just shows you what has happened in those intervening years. And, of course, when they had this exhibition of these 100 books, people were outraged by various things.
Of course.
The omissions, most notably.
Yeah, of course.
So they compromised and added some to this list and put this little asterisk next to the titles that said this was part of the people's choice. And those included Portnoy's Complaint, On the Road, The Portrait of Faulkner. There was no Faulkner in their list.
Wow.
It's no Ayn Rand, no Ayn Rind, whatever, no Atlas Shrugged. But okay. Still, you could do worse than to sit down with this compilation and read every one of those things and get some real sweeping sense of history of those 100 years.
It makes me think, when we have the 100th episode of this show, God willing, we'll do the Mount Rushmore, right? Everybody has to pick Mount Rushmore. You have to pick four. Is it four on Mount Rushmore? How many are on Mount Rushmore?
Four.
Yeah. You have to pick four that would go on Mount Rushmore.
Okay, Elvis, cool. Elvis, Buddy Holly.
Exactly. Okay, before I forget, the biography of Edison by Edmund Morris. Mm. Unbelievable.
Okay.
Unbelievable. Okay, now, Michael, you and I have been going back and forth for the last 10 days about this. There have been several articles recently about e-books for toddlers. Good, bad, indifferent.
I want to focus in on a Ron Charles perspective piece, and this was when I was trying to distract myself from anything and everything that had to do with baseball. And I know last spring we actually looked at, on this show, we looked at e-readers versus holding on to books for us.
Yeah. Right,
and
adults.
The idea of horizontal so-called. Versus vertical reading. Mm-hmm. And I just thought this was a really interesting piece. I'm going to read two short paragraphs from this because I think he frames it really well.
He's so great.
For background, we have Amazon, who is coming out with basically a kids-themed Kindle book. So it's going to have the kids graphic. They're going to say it's kids focused and that doesn't have any other apps. It doesn't have games. It has access to as many books as, say, it can hold, but it opens up the entire library. So if you don't mind, I'm just going to read briefly. From the start, most children need and crave the tactile interaction that real books provide. Their rapidly developing fine motor skills evolve alongside their delight with illustrations and the pleasure of turning pages. They move from chewing the covers to feeling the paper as the wonder of one double-page spread unfolds to the next. We should be in no rush to lure them away from the talismanic aura of real books. Forget about efficiency. Kids don't feel burdened by carrying physical books. They feel girded with the tools of their own entertainment. They clutch them. They rearrange them. They show them off, and most importantly, they use them to build castles in their own minds. I go forward. All the convenience of being able to access 1,000 titles on an e-reader could never justify its efficient obliteration of a young person's shelf of cherished books. 7 Harry Potter volumes stacked next to the bed are a monument to a kid's determination and devotion. 7 Harry Potter titles on a Kindle might as well be under an invisibility cloak. The very physical thingness of a printed book offers an enhancement that e-ink can't touch. So the writing here alone is worth just reading.
Yeah, he's a good writer.
If you look at the physical quality of those embedded clauses that is building to this point about the value of the book. Now, I admit I'm biased. I have 2 young boys. We make time to read to Walker every single day. And when I read these paragraphs, I see Walker getting into bed to read with Mama or Dada as he weighs, do I want to read On the Night You Were Born or Harold and the Purple Crayon? Do I want to read Goodnight Construction Night, which gets me a few more extra minutes with Mama, or do I want to read?
Isn't it amazing how manipulative they can be at a very young age?
Goes, 2 books, Walkie, 2 books. And he goes, he shakes his head. And halfway through the second one, he's going to something else. When we're reading those books, he's tracing the spine. One of the pleasures I have is when I walk in on the room and someone else is reading to him and I see how engaged he is with that moment. When I see someone take him to the library, his grandmother, and he gets to choose which books to take home, and he's going through different phases right now. So I get all that, and I know this with this ebook, it's primarily about older readers, but it starts when you're 1, when you're 2, when you're reading the unbreakable, chewable books in the bathtub, and that's where you carry those habits forward, and they evolve with you. So I know this is more about older children who are entering the chapter book phase, and we're we're trying to do anything we can to break the fourth grade reading slump. So we have kids who are going from learning to read
you have to
reading
yeah.
to learn.
Say it. I'm sorry to interrupt you. So say it again. Yeah.
To reading to learn. And you have kids who have been pretty successful. They've learned to memorize the sounds. We know the pictures. We associate the back and forth chorus of reading with mama or a teacher. And all of a sudden, sentences are hard. Paragraphs are hard to decipher. And you have this rift where you really can never make up that ground. And unfortunately, we have all this data as to what groups this is going to impact the most. So I'm totally with Ron Charles. My worry comes back to equity, and I wonder, is there some way that we can make these resources available? Because there's one thing that our family has. We have time, we have education, we have a value system where we place a lot of meaning on those habits, but that's not possible in a lot of households. Mm-hmm. So that's where I read this with so much enthusiasm, but I want to make sure that I'm not just right. cutting off an entire other group mm-hmm. because
no,
of my
I know,
own experience.
I know exactly what you're saying. When I think about it, and you and I have been going back and forth with emails and texts, and some of the best memories that Brian and I have are reading to our kids. Mm-hmm. And it was the physical, you're with them, and they're curled up with you, and you're reading these books, and you read them 10,000 times, and that was okay because you were doing it with them. Mm-hmm. We went on a trip once, and for 2 weeks, we read together Harry Potter, and we read it. Mm-hmm. The book was in front of us, and we took turns reading, and it was that shared experience, which was great. And I get it. And then I think to myself, okay, but we had two parents, right? We had sure. the means. We had the opportunity. We had the time. Mm-hmm. If you don't, and maybe the best you can do is you give an e-reader to your kid, maybe, you know, for some people, maybe that's the
and
best you can
programs.
Do.
We talk about the D.C. public libraries, and I'm sure yeah. Montgomery County, Northern Virginia has this as well. They have fantastic programming for infants
yeah.
and toddlers, but that still is a sacrifice to get there. How are you going right. to get a kid to an 11 a.m. program?
Mm-hmm. Ron Charles in that same piece. Ron Charles is the greatest, and I'll read his thank you note. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm going to put Kathleen on a little pressure here. Mr. Popper's Penguins. Did anybody else read that when they were a kid?
No.
Oh, it's the greatest book ever. This crazy, wild P.T. Barnum kind of guy, right, Michael? Ends up raising a bunch of penguins in his house.
He just ends up listing, and again, this is more with older readers in mind, but just a great list of, I mean, even yeah. now, we're going back to our own catalog of the books stacked up next to our own bedside table.
Yeah. So Ron sent us a thank you note. Ron has been on twice, and he sent us a lovely postcard. It looks like it's from an Icelandic bookstore. Who has a postcard from an Icelandic bookstore?
Charles does.
And it says, to the Chatter on Books gang, thanks for having me back on the show and for giving the Book World newsletter. If you do not subscribe to the Ron Charles Book World newsletter, you should. A nice plug. Happy Halloween. Best to everybody, Ron Charles. So now Ron has reached the Pantheon. Ron, Mike Crowley, Michael's pal. When does the Golf Magazine thing come out, by the way?
We're not talking about that yet.
Ooh, okay.
Too much pressure.
So Ron Charles, Mike Crowley, and Kerry Callahan. Thank you notes. Handwritten,
nice.
Mailed
a beautiful
with
postcard.
A stamp. Thank you note.
From no pressure, Kathleen.
Never happens. Never happens.
I have okay. lovely notes at home, but I don't have any beautiful postcards from
it's really
Icelandic
lovely.
Bookstore.
It's a little out of the park because he walked in with a yeah. New Yorker tote bag.
Yeah. Jeannie, look, it's a little watercolor. It's nice.
Nice.
Okay. David.
What?
You're back.
Yeah,
we've missed
back.
You.
Oh, you didn't miss me that much.
No, we really did. And there were David Aldridge moments. And then there were these kind of derivative David Aldridge moments. And then it went on and on and on. So I have one question, then I'll let anybody else ask whatever they want.
Sure.
So you're covering, it's not really, you're covering the Nats, and the word improbable just kept coming up again and again and again, right? Mm-hmm. That was the word I heard more often from anybody. So you're covering a pretty remarkable series, mm-hmm. and born and raised Washington, D.C., never had a team win the World Series. What was your driving emotion through the seven games of the World Series?
Oh, I think the main thing is that I just wanted it to keep going on. It was just so much great theater. It was so remarkable to watch. I've watched athletes for a very long time, so you can get kind of jaded. Even elite level athletes, you get kind of jaded because you yeah. expect to see greatness, right?
Right.
What you don't see a lot of is toughness. There's a difference between greatness and toughness. I mean, if you watched Muhammad Ali's career, for example, he fought a guy named Cleveland Williams one night in 1967, and that was at the absolute height of his talent.
Right.
And he knocked him out in three rounds because that nobody on earth would have beat Muhammad Ali that night in the history of the world, before or since. Nobody would have beat him that night. He was too good. He was too fast. He was too athletic, strong, all of those things that made him great. But that wasn't toughness. Toughness was when he fought Joe Frazier in the Philippines when it was 120 degrees. Mm-hmm. In the 14th round, he figured out somehow to get his hands up enough to knock Joe Frazier's mouthpiece out and win the fight. And you don't see toughness. That's what I really come to admire in athletes, because it's so difficult because they're all so good at this. They're all so good at what they do. And so to watch them over 6 months, from 19 and 31 in May through October, to consistently come back again and again and again and again and again. And it's so hard in baseball because it's every day.
It's every pitch.
And you don't get days off. And it's hard to win. Yeah. It's hard to win five games in a row in baseball just because of the vagaries of the sport. You know, there's literally a category called luck in baseball. You know, sometimes you just have bad luck and there's nothing you can do about it. And you lose the game because you had bad luck that night, you know? So, to watch them get to the playoffs over a five-month period and then all of October, starting with the first game in October, which was the wild card game.
I never slept.
Yeah, when they're down.
Who slept for the last 6 weeks? Yeah. Let me just point out.
They're down 3-1 in the eighth inning, and Milwaukee brings in the best relief pitcher in baseball this year. The best guy. The guy that nobody gets hits off of, Josh Hader, who throws just insane smoke and insane curveballs. It's just, and nobody hits him. And he hits Michael A. Taylor. It's luck. It doesn't, yeah, it, I mean, it was a bad pitch, right. But there's lots of bad pitches that don't hit the batter. And it just happened to hit the batter a millisecond before it hit the bat, in which case would have been a foul ball. So he goes to first. He throws a pitch to Ryan Zimmerman. It's a fastball in Ryan Zimmerman's hands. And he shatters his bat. And Ryan Zimmerman swings, and he's strong enough to just pop the ball over the second baseman's head into center field. It's a 1,000,000-to-1 shot. It never happens. It doesn't happen. Then he's a little rattled, and he walks Anthony Rendon, who's got the best eyes in baseball, among the best eyes mm-hmm. in baseball. So now the bases are loaded through no fault of the pitcher, really. I mean, and he throws the pitch to Juan Soto, and he probably wishes he had back, and Soto hits it into right field. And the ball, which for the previous seven years, always bounced the wrong way for the Nationals at the wrong time in the playoffs, this time bounces. It hits the ground, and it doesn't go straight. It goes sideways past the right fielder, allowing three runs to score, and the Nationals win the game. It's just, it's luck. That's luck, but it's also being skilled and being in the right moment. And that just started an entire month when they did this over and over and over again. They were down five times in elimination games. Five times. Three of which were on the road, one of which was game 7 of the World Series. You know, and for them to continually come back, I've never seen a team as mentally tough as they were.
So no, because you cover a lot of different sports.
That's what I was saying
to Gene and to Michael before. I've never seen anything like it, and I'm an amateur sports fan, but I watch a lot of it, and I try to be honest about what I see. I've never seen a team who has come back against all odds. We keep that word improbable, kept coming up. This does not make sense. It shouldn't happen. Every game they played, we were at the wild card game, and every game they played, I said, I'm happy to be here. This is great, right? And even the World Series games here, it would have been nice when they were home if they could have won one. But still, this is incredible that they're here. But there's never been anything like this.
No, and it made me appreciate the game much more than I have before, than I ever have before.
Yeah.
Because I, you know, as you mentioned, I grew up here. I grew up in the city, and we didn't have baseball. The Senators left when I was 6. I have no memory. I have one memory of my mother taking me to a baseball. But we didn't have it. It just wasn't there. So you don't miss what you don't have. You just move on to something else. So, but baseball never got into your marrow. You know, it never got into your soul. You know? So,
yeah.
Watching this team over the course of this entire season, because I was there at spring training all the way through, you know, it gives you a real appreciation for the how hard it is to be successful in the sport of baseball.
Over, because of so many games?
Because of the variance.
Yeah.
So much variance in the game. Right. That doesn't, it doesn't have anything to do with how good you are.
So many opportunities for injury.
Well, yeah, that's part of the variance.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just, it's such a long season. Look, I cover the NBA a lot. It's a very long and hard season. It's 82 games. Baseball's twice as long.
Twice as long, yeah.
So, twice as long as hockey.
Going back to spring training, one of the things we talked about back in March was the impact of Trevor Rosenthal as a setup guy. And you think about what's going to be the impact 50, 75 years from now, now that baseball is in the marrow of our bones, is part of our fabric. And you know, it's hard for all of us as DC sports fans and people who talk about it to some degree. Obviously you're in a different category, but you know, you take personally how your teams perform, how people talk about your city, and so much of the DC success with this baseball team over this 7-year window has been about their shortcomings. And so much has been wrapped up into the renaissance of the city, the brand name restaurants that are moving into what were vacant lots.
Right.
And so it's just such a nice narrative arc and closure to this. We're now a real baseball town. I mean, you're beginning to accept it. Obviously there is history to make up for that, but you're willing to understand where some of the luck comes into play. Mm-hmm. I mean, the hardest hit balls that produce out, the bounces that are going right to, you know, a third baseman that should be inning ending. But there's just something about the social makeup of that team in this city right now that's just a great reminder of what the nation's capital is.
Yeah. Well, there was a great significance to the fact that while they were very good for a long time, it took Gerardo Parra getting here for them to start having fun.
Which you again. Said months ago.
Mm-hmm.
You said months ago.
They weren't having any fun.
Yeah.
They were a miserable, grinding team that didn't have any fun at all.
And as somebody who, because I grew up in Pittsburgh and I feel like I knew Willie Stargell and Roberto Clemente personally and Manny St. Guillen and these guys, they were great personalities. It was not the same.
No.
And I talked to a friend the other day, a guy who's been very successful in NHL hockey and NFL football. He's done both at a very, very high level. And he always liked hockey better because he says the guys are more fun, they're more low-key, they don't have all these kinds of things. He says the Nats are like a hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
Just a bunch of good guys who really enjoyed playing with one another. And it is different,
sure.
Right? That is different, what they had going on in that dugout.
Liking each other is important. It gets you through a lot of rough patches.
Like this show. It gets us through a lot of rough patches. So, David, if you were writing a book about this World Series, just the World Series, what would you call it?
Oh, my gosh.
Or Michael or Gene?
I have no idea.
Improbable.
Well,
yes, right?
I'd probably call it Road Warriors or something like that because nobody at home actually won a game. You know, all 7 games were won by the road team.
Never happened before, right?
Never.
Never.
In
any sport.
Holy cow.
I think we should ask Dew when he finally accepts our invitation.
Exactly. Who accepted our invitation in the spring, Sean Doolittle.
Oh, yes.
And then when they started to tank,
rescinded. He did. I didn't push him as hard as I should have, but they were in the middle of a playoff race.
But he can't get back to Chicago fast enough.
Yeah, well, you know, that was scheduled, and they have their thoughts on these things.
I loved him in the parade, my favorite scene. Him with a lightsaber on the back of the bullpen. Cart, just spectacular.
Yes.
Okay, Kathleen Barber is sitting here going, I thought I was going to talk about my...
about
I thought this was an hour
long. Retreating?
I didn't study about the Nats.
No, I get that they are an important story right now.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we will come back with Kathleen Barber and talk about Are You Sleeping? This is so official. We're back with Chatter on Books at our favorite undisclosed location. Anybody notice the bartender's not here tonight?
I know.
Yeah, sad.
Did he get fired?
After the last 6 weeks, including last night, he had to go to the West Coast to do some work. I think it's detox.
I think he just had to sleep.
I think it's detox. We're a Caps family, Kathleen, and we are all in on the Caps, and that involves a lot of Goose Island beer. And so we swore to each other that for the baseball season, we were going to take it easy, low-key. It's been insane.
Yeah.
Insane. And I never... Okay. I swear to God, we'll get on with the show. If Brian is home alone with 3 dogs who have replaced 3 children, he'll have a couple glasses of wine, he'll have beer, something like that. If I'm home alone, it would never occur to me. But I've been on the road for the last couple of weeks and was by myself for some of the games and the World Series. I'm in some sad motel room somewhere, like slamming beers. Like, how many can I take with me from the bar? Okay, we're back. This is now it's time for All Kathleen All the Time. So Kathleen Barber is here. She is the author of this wonderful book, Are You Sleeping? Which is about to be called Truth Be Told.
That's right.
On Apple iTV. And then you've got another book coming out, which we will talk about. But let's talk about you first, because it seems like if you're an author on Chatter on Books, you have to have either been a lawyer or wanted to be an astronaut. So you went the lawyer route.
I did.
Why did you want? Were you a lawyer for Halloween? Did you go as a lawyer or something?
No. I've never been a lawyer for Halloween. Uh-huh.
But why did you want to be a lawyer?
My dad was a lawyer. So my dad was a lawyer, and he always seemed like he really enjoyed it. So uh-huh. I wanted to be a lawyer also. In fact, my dad was a bankruptcy lawyer, and I went ahead to go on and be a bankruptcy lawyer.
Wow.
So yeah.
Calling therapy.
Yeah.
did you do it? How long did you do it?
I did. So I practiced for maybe like 4 years or uh-huh. so, and then decided to call it quits.
What caused, we know you love writing.
Yeah.
But is that what caused you to call it quits or something else?
That was definitely part of it. But the largest part of it was at the time, my husband and I were both working at large law firms in Manhattan. And the lifestyle there was just really, really difficult. I was eating all three of my meals every day at my desk. Mark, my now husband, and I, we would spend days when we didn't actually see each other, even though we lived in the same apartment.
Nice.
And it was just, yeah, it was just very, very hard. And I had always wanted to write, and I was trying to write in my spare time, but I actually
had, you had no spare time.
Yeah. So it was kind of, it was becoming an untenable situation.
But when you said I've read some of this, but for mm-hmm. the show, you did spend some time writing. What were you writing? And you'd be on your way to or from work, or you'd have 3 minutes at home. What would you write?
A lot of the time, I was actually working on the book that was going to become Are You Sleeping? No. I mean, it was a much different story at the time. So I have actually been working on the book that became Are You Sleeping since I was in high school in the mid-90s. So it's been a long time coming. But way back then, it was not the same story at all. It was, obviously, there were no podcasts because there were right. no podcasts in the mid-90s. But there was also no murder. It was just, I was just really interested in the characters. And so I kept writing about them. So I wrote about lots of other, I started many other different novels while I was working. But this was the one I really stuck with.
So this one, without giving anything away, is about a family. Father is murdered.
Yes.
Completely turns the family upside down. And then turning the family even more upside down is a Serial-like podcast. Serial, which really started the whole mm-hmm. podcast.
And that's what
world.
Prompted you to change your story yeah. to be this sort of a crime story when you listen to this Serial podcast.
It is. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right. I had never really listened to podcasts before Serial. And my brother, who shares my kind of like interest in true crime stories, uh-huh. had started listening to it.
Did you watch Law and Order?
Oh, I love Law and Order.
Yes. You're in the right place.
Forensic Files. You're going to be here all night. We got a guest bedroom upstairs.
Did you guys know there used to be this website that was like, what channel is lawandorderon.com or something?
Didn't need it. I could go anywhere in the world. I knew how to find Law and Order.
Yeah, it was basically on all the time. I used to watch it so much.
Gagong.
So my brother had started listening to Serial, and he thought that I would like it. So he kept asking me to listen to it, and I was like, well, I don't really know. Like, when am I going to listen to a podcast? Because I wasn't working at the time, so I wasn't commuting or anything. And because I'd never listened to them before, I just didn't know that I was going to like them. And so I finally started, and I just totally fell head over heels for it. Because I came into it kind of late. There were maybe like, I was maybe like 7 or 8 episodes in, so I basically just like listened to them like yeah. one after the other.
Someday I would love to see data that shows when people came into it, because I was like you. I heard about it. I was mm-hmm. like, oh, please, really. And then once I got in, our dogs got very long walks because I would start listening to it and like, no, it's still going. We're going to keep looping.
I started running a lot more. Yes. I was like, I wouldn't want to like get off.
Right. What was it about Serial that you liked that you then applied to the story?
The thing that I thought was so interesting was, because, like I said, I was interested in Law and Order, and I did like to read like other sorts of true crime stories. But in those, you're usually reading about something that there's already been a conclusion. Or even if it's like an unresolved case, like the person who is writing it already has a conclusion in mind. Whereas with the serial, she was kind of doing it as it went along.
Right.
So the story was constantly evolving. And I just thought that was so interesting. I just kept wanting to see what was going to happen next and what other kind of thing was going to be discovered.
Uh-huh. So you have twins. We were talking before you got here. Mm-hmm. Twins are always creepy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Come on. They're just creepy. Mm-hmm. So you got the twins, and then you have a protagonist who's not entirely lovable.
Right.
How did you feel about that?
Well, so I have actually always liked Josie. And when I started trying to query the book, I had agents write back.
Can you explain what querying is?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So after you've written a book, when you're looking to get an agent to then sell your book to a publishing house, you have to send out what are essentially a bunch of cover letters.
Mm-hmm.
And they're basically like, "Hi, my name is so-and-so.
Never heard of me."
Yeah. I've written this wonderful book. I think that you are the person to represent it because XYZ reason. You know, you represented other books that I liked. You have a stated interest in books about podcasts. So you send out all of these and most people never respond, which is very demoralizing. But some of the, I did get started getting responses from my queries, and a lot of people said, you know, she's not a very likable character. I think you kind of need to soften her up a little bit.
Wow.
And I felt really resistant to that. And around that same time, I read Luckiest Girl Alive by Jessica Knoll, which also has a somewhat prickly protagonist. Mm-hmm. And so that book was doing very well. And I was like, if she can do this, I can do this. I think there are probably a few instances where I did perhaps soften Josie a little bit, but not very much.
Mm-hmm. So the fact that there's a podcast that is covering this murder and saying there's an alternative, again, without giving it, there's an alternative ending to this, so much of it was in the story is the impact on the family. Mm-hmm. So now, when you're following true crime stuff and true crime podcasts and serial-like things, do you think differently about the families?
I do.
Because the book gets into a lot about the impact on the family of the podcast bringing so much attention.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was actually what got me started on, like, adding that angle to my story was because after I'd gotten so involved in Serial and I was... You know, I was like reading everything that there was about it. I was following the hashtags and like hanging around the subreddit. And
you stopped eating, taking showers.
Basically. My poor brother felt bad about introducing me to it.
I've addicted my sister.
But when I started like Google searching to see what these people looked like, I kind of was like, oh,
yeah,
I'm being a creep. If I am being a creep,
yes. Stalkery.
Yeah. Visited the park.
Yeah.
Best Buy parking lot.
Exactly. Looking for the telephone booth. But it kind of made me think how the family of Heyman Lee, who was the victim in the serial case, how they would feel about something like this. Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of my jumping off point for the book. And honestly, since that, I've kind of lost my taste for a lot of true crime stuff.
I'm sad.
Because I can see the pain that it reintroduces a family to when that something like that becomes popular. So your book uses sort of different genres. It's a traditional novel, but then it has transcripts from the podcast. Mm-hmm. It has these sort of cruel tweet exchanges. Between,
but very realistic.
But
cruel.
Very realistic. Yeah. Somebody in favor of something and somebody undermining something. And it was very interesting to me the way you switched gears.
Well, thank you. So the reason that I included the transcripts specifically was because of my own interest in Serial, and I really wanted the reader to be experiencing the podcast aspect of my book the same way that I had experienced the Serial podcast. And then I did the tweets and those kinds of things just because, I mean, people on the internet are terrible. Just awful.
Yeah.
And so
it's a bad place.
They're tweeting us now.
And so it wouldn't have felt authentic to write a book.
No, it seemed very real to me, those comments.
Okay,
Was were your editor and your publisher, were they into that? Were they okay with that?
Yeah. They liked that.
I loved it because you're reading along and then you go, okay, wait, different mindset. really puts you in the place of the people who would have been reading those going, oh my God. Okay, so this will be, it's going to be called Truth Be Told.
It is.
Apple TV, tell us when, where,
right.
how.
Yeah, so the show that's kind of like based on the novel is called Truth Be Told. It premieres on Apple TV Plus on December 6th. Uh-huh. It stars Octavia Spencer and Aaron Paul and
Who
Lily
is
Kaplan.
Octavia Spencer?
I know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's very exciting.
It Aaron Paul?
Yeah.
Who's
yeah.
hot? Yeah. Yeah. Very
Aaron
hot right
Paul
now.
Aaron Paul is playing Warren Cave, who is the man uh-huh. who's in
right.
prison for,
perfect.
For a murder. Yeah.
So and who
very
plays the... do twins play the twins?
No, so Lizzie Kaplan is going to play both Josie and Lainey. Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm really excited about that. She's kind of exactly as I envisioned
yes.
writing it.
Oh, was the experience good? How did you feel when they changed the title?
I was a little nervous at first because...
And then they sent you a check and you said, good with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Call it whatever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But also, we're re-releasing the book under the title Truth Be Told on November 5th.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So that'll kind of like go along with it. But it's been fantastic. Nichelle Tramble Spellman is the writer of the series and kind of the creator who's kind of reinvented some of the characters. And she's just phenomenal. So I'm really excited to see what she does with it.
Okay, but take us back. So the book's been out for a couple of years.
Yes.
Fabulous book. I should mention it more often. It's called Are You Sleeping?
You.
Soon to be called Truth Be Told. Mm-hmm. Can you get under both titles?
Yes. Well, so as a,
is this
as a,
kind
as
of
a tomorrow,
collector's
November
item now? Should
is,
I have you sign
is.
This one? Because then, yeah. who called you first and said, it's Reese Witherspoon is producing,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So who called you first? Who sent you an email going, by the way, somebody wants to turn this into...
Well, so way back in April 2016, right after I sold the book, so maybe not April, but sometime in the spring of 2016 after I sold the book, my literary agent was like, there's some film agents who are interested in your book. And I was
they
like,
always say that.
I know. And so I took that with a massive grain of salt. And I was like, well, that sounds great. Sure. Go tell them to go ahead and do whatever. And then later that fall, so even before the book was out, they were starting to say, you know, we've got some real interest in this. And I did a series of creative calls.
What does that mean?
So it's when you get on the phone with these producers who are interested in acquiring your novel, and they kind of have an opportunity to tell you what their vision is, but then they also have an opportunity to kind of see what you're going to be like to work with.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
are you going to do what we tell you, or are you going to be a problem child?
Right. Bend to our will or not.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a dual interview. And one of them was with, it wasn't called Hello Sunshine at the time. It was Reese Witherspoon's company before that. But so Reese Witherspoon was on the phone, and it was basically this huge conference call. So I'm terrible on conference calls.
And did you know she was there?
I did. I knew that she was going to be on the call. Mm-hmm. And she has a very recognizable voice.
Yes, sure.
Yeah. So there were all these people on the call, and I could recognize her voice and my agent's voice. But other than that, I had no idea who anybody else was. And it was more awkward than I would have liked it to be.
I'm just drowning in thinking about how hard that must have been.
Yeah. But...
Were you the first to arrive in the conference call?
No.
I would have been on 45 minutes early.
I was afraid of being the first one, you know what I mean? I hate being the first one on a conference call. But yeah, so it was fantastic. They had really nice things to say about it. And so we kind of had an agreement in principle then fairly shortly after that. But then it took a really long time.
Yeah,
to,
it does.
You know, for them to find the talent and to, you know, they didn't want to make any announcements until everything was locked down, which it makes sense.
Yeah.
But it was killing me because I wanted to tell everyone.
So it's absolutely fabulous. Octavia Spencer.
Yeah.
That's huge.
I know. I know. It was
absolutely huge.
I know. I'm trying to figure out who she plays.
Give it away.
Yeah, don't give it away.
No. Well, I mean, it's in the previews.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so Octavia Spencer plays Poppy Parnell.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Which is fabulous.
Oh,
yeah.
That's great.
Because that takes a different...
It does, yeah. So the television show actually... And I've only read the pilot and seen a little bit of it, but goes in a little bit of a different way. Because with Octavia Spencer as the star, then Poppy Parnell, who's the investigative reporter of the podcast, becomes a star rather than my protagonist, Josie. Which which is kind of strange as the author, but is really cool and very exciting because they've done a lot of different things with the character that are really cool.
So, that's great. So you're happy with how you think it's ended up, which is so often not the case. I think I may have told the story on this show, if not, I don't know, somewhere. So Chris Buckley, I've known for 1,000 years, has wonderful, he has several wonderful books. Thank You for Smoking. Great book. It gets sold, you know, big mega Hollywood people are going to do the movie, and whoever the screenwriter was calls him up and goes, I'm the guy that's going to F up your book. And that's what they did. But Chris said, you know, write the check, I'm fine, those kinds of things. Okay, so you have another book coming out.
I do.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's called Follow Me. It comes out in February next year. It is about a woman who kind of lives her life online and how that kind of comes back to bite her a little bit. So she has just left New York City, moved down here to D.C.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Where have we heard that before?
But when she does that, she kind of unknowingly comes within the striking distance of this person who has been kind of obsessed with her for a while and has been following her online. And so she kind of blithely continues about her life, just posting details here and there. And this person is figuring out how to use those details against her.
Excellent. Excellent. Michael's looking forward to that one. Okay, last question. You had a very deliberate process writing your book, at least the last book. I'm sure it applies to the next one, but you have a small child, so that might have completely turned upside down. But there was discipline and focus and organization to how you wrote, right?
Yes.
X number of hours, X number of words a day?
Yeah, you know, I tend to go more for time in my chair. Because otherwise, if I'm just doing like the X number of words a day, I tend to just be like, well, let's see how bloated I can make this paragraph.
Happy and glad. That's three.
Yeah. But I do, because I'm not working in another job right now, I treat it as though it's my job. And I sit down in the morning at my computer and I have a goal for the scenes that I want to work on that day. And then I sit down and do it. I often have to use an app called Self Control to turn off my internet so that I cannot,
good one,
you know, hang around on Twitter. But it's become much more necessary now that I do have the small child, because when I was working on Are You Sleeping, I didn't. And so I could stay up very late writing. I could get up very early and write. I could write every day of the week. Now I only have my child in care 3 days a week. So I've got 3 days that I really can work.
So you buckle down then?
I do. I buckle down then. I can work in the evenings the other nights, but...
You just have another 20 years of sleep deprivation ahead of you.
It's fine. It turns out great.
Absolutely not.
I know.
Okay. So it's Kathleen Barber. This book is Are You Sleeping? Soon to be called Truth Be Told.
Yes.
To come out with a series. It's absolutely fabulous. Thank you. Dave, we're going to take a break, and then we'll come back with The Deserted Island. We're back. It's Chatter on Books in our favorite undisclosed location. And before we get to Deserted Island, I had this here because I just got such a kick out of it. There have been wonderful full-page ads in response to the Nats winning the World Series. Kathleen is going, I thought I was on a book show. This is
baseball.
The AARP ad. They have a Max Scherzer ad. Michael, have you seen this?
No.
I loved this.
Quote, the old guys can do it. We have the experience. We don't fold under pressure. Max Scherzer. It's AARP. It's so
full
great.
Page. It's full-page
ad. Just love it. That's not cheap. Gene, what does that cost these days?
I have no idea.
$100,000?
It's a great play on the fold in the paper.
Yes. Yeah.
Very and the
nice.
Great color. Yeah. It's fabulous. Okay, so we're back to Deserted Island. And this time, again, I thought at 3 o'clock in the morning in Flatwood, West Virginia, this was a really good idea. It's not a good idea for a podcast because it's visual. But if you're watching a News Channel 8, what I have handed out to everybody here at the table, and you all can play, is three different... shots. These are three different bookshelves in three different cities in the United States of America.
Okay.
And I want you to try to guess where they are.
These are very high-end printouts, by the way.
Mm-hmm. It's my bad little printer upstairs.
One,
I couldn't do color because that's too expensive.
So I'll try to convey to our listeners.
Yeah, explain some of the books.
Page one seems to be full of paperback books.
Mm-hmm.
And there are... Sylvia Day, Allison Brennan, Debbie Mason, Jill Chalvis.
E.L. James.
Yeah. Heather Graham, Cheryl Woods. Let's see.
Then interesting.
Are we getting any hints?
I don't see it. Oh, well, there's a Louise Penny, which is interesting. Uh-huh. Perhaps a clue. I don't see a John Grisham.
Then you go to the next one, which has fewer, but...
But it has Colson Whitehead's...
Which, if you've not read Nickel Boys, stop Nickel everything Boys, you're doing now. Go read that book.
A clue.
It's hardbacks, too.
And mm-hmm. it's hardbacks. It does have a James Patterson, but it also has Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow.
By the way, read it, terrible.
Which
don't,
is quite...
Don't.
A possible
Don't.
Clue.
Just stick knitting needles in your eyes.
It also has Foe in the bottom corner.
Somebody has read The Foe? Sixth Extinction,
Devil in the
Unnatural
White City.
History by book. Elizabeth Colbert, who's a wonderful writer for The New Yorker.
Framing this, page one, James Rollins, sort of science thriller, is dead center, which I think is going to be my big clue going forward.
Okay. So page two is definitely more cosmopolitan.
Okay. We'll put pictures of this on News Channel 8 so
definitely
everyone can see it.
Definitely the Acela Quarter on page two.
And then go to page three.
For sure.
Got Grisham.
Remainders.
Leaping out at you.
All
Stephen
on
King.
Sale.
And we got a
All
Mitch album.
Heavy discount.
All on sale.
James Patterson.
Sue Grafton. Mm-hmm. We have two Stephen Kings.
These are big bestsellers.
Two James Patterson.
Big bestsellers who are discounted.
Now, you all could just look at this and try to look at the books and come up and ask me questions. Or you could say, where would Tori have been in the last 4 to 6 weeks?
I don't know. You would have been in...
Well, I have no idea where you have been in the last 4 to 6 weeks. But if we're looking for clues on the pages, there's Devil in the White City on page two, which would hint at Chicago.
So it would. It would be wrong, but you could hint at that. Yeah, go ahead.
That's right, because that is a
Northwestern law school grad.
But it's an urban bookstore.
All right. So if you've been
all three are relatively urban. I'll give you that. Right.
Can you please, God, can you give us the three cities?
Are any of these at a train station or an airport?
One's at an airport.
What's my
Good
line?
What are we doing?
Like, all east of the Mississippi. All east of the Mississippi.
No, you have to say, here are the three areas.
No, I don't. It's my
east
show.
East of the Mississippi.
I insist.
Where would Tori have been in the last 5 weeks east of the Mississippi?
None of these were in Flatwood, West Virginia, by the way, where I was recently. Yeah.
Where would she?
They kind of surprised me, honestly.
Kentucky?
I'll tell you. No, they kind of surprised me because especially the first one is not what I expected.
I would say one is in Pennsylvania.
You're wrong. Would be wrong.
Oh,
be wrong.
I thought you'd been back home towards the home.
Let me know how long you all want the pain to go on.
Yeah, we could go on for
hours. Yeah, this is really, again, a great segment on News Channel 8.
Page number one looks like it's at Dulles. It just
close.
Has that
Very good, Michael. LaGuardia.
Ah.
Yeah, LaGuardia. I thought there would be more self-help, though. So you only see one. Down at the bottom, 60 ways to lower your blood pressure, which is good for people hanging out in LaGuardia.
All you're missing is the take a book, leave a book when you're done with it.
Yeah, that's LaGuardia. Second one, Bethesda, Maryland.
Makes sense.
Right?
Okay.
Totally makes sense.
Nickel
but Devil in the White City pops up. It disappears for years at a time. And then it comes back. It's a good book, right?
Yeah. Good.
And then the last one, which has, again, this kind of surprised me because there's Stephen King, right?
James Patterson,
right?
Mitch Albom.
Sue Grafton.
Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Huh.
I thought you would get more, where the crawdads sing.
Yeah.
I thought you'd get a little more university, blah, 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 blah.
Was it an airport?
No. Downtown Ann Arbor.
Beautiful.
There you go. So there we go. Again, great for News Channel 8, not so good for the podcast, but okay.
We can fix it in post.
We're going to wrap this up. It's almost midnight. Some people need to go on to their lives. Kathleen's child has graduated from college now. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Calvert Woodley. People really should go there. They have the most knowledgeable staff there at Calvert Woodley. They're the best. David, thank you for helping us out this evening, my friend.
Yes.
David Aldridge, nice to be back.
Good to be back.
Just
fight
great
finished.
To have you back.
Fight
yeah.
finished.
Fight finished.
Fight finished.
Red
I have so
sleepy.
Many red towels in my house. Between the caps and the gnats, there are red towels everywhere. Michael, great to have you here. Gene, thank you. Kathleen, thank you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Come
you.
Back. Come back for the next one.
Yeah, come back when the second book comes out.
And the rule here with Chatter is when your book gets made into a movie, we get invited to the red carpet.
Okay, yes. Well, I will do it. I can see what I can do.
Thank you. So we're off next week for Veterans Day. Thank a veteran. And then we come back on the 18th with Richard Armstrong, Don Kahn, which Ron Charles says is absolutely fabulous.
Okay.
So thanks, everybody. It's the last time of the season. I'll say go Nats. Thanks, guys.